Okay, welcome back. We have with us now Mark Weber, back to business again, as the trial of Ernst Zundel has begun in Germany. Ernst, of course, in the Mannheim prison there, charged with thought crimes. Hard to believe that's even happening, but it is. 3 years of Ernst Zundel's life have been stolen from him. What kind of punishment will they mete out next? We'll find out what's going on now from Mark Weber, Institute for Historical Review. Hello, Mark. Welcome.
Hello, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be back on again.
Thank you. I appreciate the update. You're in touch with us, watching it very carefully. First of all, how is the media in Europe and Germany, of course, covering the trial of Ernst Zundel? I hope it's getting adequate attention. It's truly a watershed legal proceeding.
Right. Much to my surprise, the media has been giving the case a great deal of attention in Germany and also in Britain and in the Canadian press. The media coverage in Germany has been very detailed and very extensive, and even much of the British press has picked up. There have been articles in all the leading British newspapers. The BBC has run a report on this on its website around the world. Huh. Which includes, by the way, a photograph from a demonstration that we organized in February in Los Angeles for Ernst Zundel's freedom before the Canadian consulate when he was being held, as it turned out, for more than 2 years in under a phony security writ in that case.
Right, right. All right, so what is the predisposition of the trial? What kind of a defense team has Ernst been able to assemble, and what kind of an offense are the authorities going to throw at him? What do we know about so far?
Yeah, Ernst Zundel, just for those who may not be familiar, is many of us regard as the number one most prominent political prisoner in the West today. He's been held now for 33 weeks in prison in Mannheim, Germany, pending the trial yesterday, and the trial was quite a spectacular event. It was supposedly the first of several days of trial, mm-hmm. but it before it even got going, it was postponed. The reason for it is that the judge said that two of the lawyers who are representing Zundel can't represent him because they agree too much with Zundel.
What?
It's astonishing. That's
what?
Right.
What?
That's
right. Wait a minute.
It's amazing. One of his attorneys is a woman named Sylvia Stoltz. And she made a motion to have another attorney, Horst Mahler, formally added to his team. Sylvia Stoltz, in fact, is a state-appointed attorney for Zundel.
Uh-huh.
But because she had asked Horst Mahler to be on the defense team, and because of arguments made by her in a 100-page brief asking that the case be dismissed, the judge dismissed her from the case. Then the remaining defense attorney and Sylvia Stoltz both asked that the judge dismiss himself for his obvious bias in the case.
Right.
Now the case has been postponed. The whole trial has been postponed until Monday, the 14th. And the judge is supposed to decide if he's biased or not.
and there's no higher authority that this could be appealed to?
Well, I've read actually conflicting stories. One is that another court will decide, and the other is that the judge himself will decide if he's biased. So I've got conflicting stories about that.
I see.
But before the case really even got off the ground, this is what's happening. The defense is arguing that the law under which Zundel is being prosecuted is unconstitutional, that it's contrary to the normal guarantees of freedom of speech and freedom of expression. But the law and the charges against Zundel in this particular case are bizarre for a number of other reasons as well, which we can get into. But amazingly, the courtroom was packed with people there to see the trial, most of whom were very strong supporters of Zundel. And they made their support for Zundel and his right to speak apparent during the course of the trial. The place was also swarming with police. They were even at the airport. They were outside the courtroom and so forth. But there was a great deal of photographers there as well. So pictures from the trial have gotten all over. The main impression that comes out is that the defense team is very determined, very gutsy, And they're not going to take any of this lying down. And it's quite a remarkable battle shaping up there.
This could go on for many weeks.
It could go on for quite a while. Originally, the prosecution had set aside, I think, 5 days for the trial. Now, that's not unusual in Europe. Trials tend to take place very quickly because they normally don't have jurors, they don't have transcripts. The judges basically decide everything. It's a holdover from the Napoleonic code of law.
Or before.
This,
so apparently they didn't watch the O.J. Simpson trial or the Michael Jackson trial here.
Well, that's...
They're behind the times, folks.
Yes. But one of the advantages, I guess it is, if you're if the judges are honest, is that trials tend to take place more quickly than in this country.
There's a pretty big if there, my friend.
Well, that's right, of course, yes. And they don't have the same protections of a jury trial as we do, at least traditionally here in this country.
I almost think that Ernst would be better off going in front of a computer.
Well, he's up against a loaded deck here.
Well, obviously. Even the media over there even the press over there has to read this loud and clear. It's a fix.
Well, the press generally is very hostile to Zindel. They take the attitude that...
Well, of course, we should hasten to add that the media over there, like it is here, is essentially owned by a few corporations.
Well, the media, yes, and there's quite a bit could be said about just how centrally controlled the media is, especially in Germany. But more than that, the media tends to be much more pliant, much more complacent, much more a tool of the establishment of the government, even here than in this country.
Even more so.
Yeah. Wow. There's a general sense in Europe that's based on centuries of tradition of sort of accepting authority that we don't quite have in this country. I mean, this country was founded on rebellion. European states have existed for centuries as monarchies, as absolute monarchies. So there's a whole different kind of tradition. That's one of the things that characterizes, at least traditionally, America as a country, is its sense of independence. But as you know very well, Jeff, much of that spirit seems to have eroded immensely in the last 10, 20 years.
It certainly has.
Well, one of the reasons the fix is in is twofold. First of all, in this particular case, and in all cases involving Holocaust denial, truth is no defense. That's a remarkable exception from the normal rule that if what a person says is true should be an absolute defense. In Germany, according to one press account, and I've heard other estimates, more than 100 people have been fined, jailed, punished in one way or another for expressing doubts about the official Holocaust story. But what's remarkable is that even statements that are factually true can result in a punishment in Germany. One example is that David Irving, some years ago when he was in Munich, he stated publicly that the gas chamber shown to tourists at the Auschwitz I main camp is a phony post-war reconstruction.
Which was confirmed by the director of archives at the Auschwitz State Museum for, 17 years or longer?
Right, the director of...
Dr. Piper?
Right, Dr. Franciszek Piper of the Auschwitz State Museum Research Center confirmed that, and Irving tried in his trial to call Piper as a witness, and that was refused.
No, they wouldn't let him in.
They wouldn't let him even testify.
Well, and for those of you who are scratching your heads saying, what's going on here? Well, the director of archives for the Auschwitz State Museum went on videotape, it must be 10 years ago now, and said that the actual tourist attraction gas chamber was constructed by the Soviets very shortly after the war in order to continue to, force world attention on the evil Nazi regime. And it took on its own life thereafter, and as some of you also know, that particular edifice was examined by Fred Luchter. Am I pronouncing his name right?
Luchter is the way Luchter. He pronounced it, yeah.
America's foremost, believe it or not, execution expert, gas chambers and so forth. He went through there, took scrapings on the walls, examined the doors, and also discovered that the drains in that building went into the main sewer system of the entire Auschwitz labor camp. He said the doors were never sealable, and the entire place was a joke. Not only that, but there were no chemical residues whatsoever on the walls. So from that, we go into what the director of the archive says, and Irving was not allowed to present any of that in his defense. So that's European justice again, I guess.
Right. Indeed, because he said that, he was fined first 10,000 marks, and the fine was increased by another court, and then on the basis of that, he was banned from Germany. On the basis of being banned from Germany for making a factual statement, other countries said, well, because he's been banned in Germany, we're going to ban you from our country as well. I mean, that's how insidious this thing is.
What kind of a world is this? Unbelievable.
Well, yeah.
I mean, all we got to do is call for a forensic examination of the building, right? And the damn thing will be settled once and for all, but ain't going to happen.
Right, right.
Okay, we'll be back in just a few minutes with Mark Weber. With Mark Weber, and lest any of you newcomers have any illusions, nobody on this program has ever, for a moment, called into question the horrors of what happened to the Jews in Europe in World War II, beyond belief. But what we want is historical accuracy, and we don't want people making money on at the expense of those many who perished, which unfortunately has been happening. And if you don't believe it, read Professor Norman Finkelstein's book, The Holocaust Industry. It's a stunning book. We want the facts. We want the truth. And I think all of you tend to agree with that, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. Mark Weber is here, the Institute of Historical Review, covering what's going on so far in the tumultuous Ernst Zundel trial in Germany. All right. So how is Ernst himself? Do we know? Do we have any?
We have a number of things. He's been in touch with some people, but not only those people who are in the courtroom, but even the pictures show that Ernst Zundel and the lawyers in his team are remarkably upbeat. Ernst Zundel is a remarkable man for a lot of reasons, and anyone who goes on your site or our IHR website can find a lot to show just what a remarkable man he is. And one of the features, one of the characteristics of him, is his really upbeat spirit, even under very difficult circumstances. And it's amazing that even though he faces 3 to 5 years in prison, that's what the prosecutor is asking for in this case, he's remarkably upbeat. Also, he faces a 20-year prohibition on ever coming back to the United States, where he has his home and where his wife has been waiting and trying everything she can to try to get him back here.
Right.
And but he sees himself as a player in a very large global drama. And
which he is.
Which he is. Indeed, one of the amazing facets of all of this, I think, is that anybody should be going after Ernst Zundel or anybody for whatever their opinions happen to be about what happened in Europe 60 years ago, given just the immense events taking place now in Europe, especially during the last, 12, 13 days in
right.
France, and also to a degree in Germany and Britain and other countries as well. I mean, Europe's going through a very major shift right now, and worrying about what Ernst Zundel says on a website here in the United States, where such where such speech is completely protected by our Constitution, worrying about that in a court in Germany is just it's with absurdity. Really, it's like as the Soviet Union was falling apart, or is in the midst of a war, worrying about what somebody's opinions about religion happen to be, or something irrelevant, something that's not relevant to the things going on. Anyway, Ernst is upbeat. His wife is as usual, very overwhelmed and by the beleaguered by the tremendous burden of carrying on this campaign here in this country. Mm-hmm. But everyone is encouraged by the tremendously combative spirit and of the defense team in this case.
This is going to be interesting to see what the judge does. Now this is adjourned until next Monday.
Until Monday the 14th. That's right.
So the judge he needs 3 or 4 days to kind of think it over. Am I biased or not? let me look and see what I've done so far in this case.
Well, it would be hard to believe, but it is true, and the reports say this, that the judge is dismissing two of the defense attorneys because they're too sympathetic with the defense.
It's mind-boggling.
It's unbelievable. Absolutely incredible. In any other situation, it would be absurd. The situation is so bad that the prosecuting attorney in Mannheim mm-hmm. has said that the defense attorney herself faces possible prosecution for what she's written in her defense brief on behalf of Zundel.
Oh, this is ludicrous. This is making an absolute joke of justice.
Defense attorneys, Jürgen Rieger, was already fined 3,600 euros, that's about $3,500, uh-huh. in another court case because he presented arguments in court which were affirming the arguments made by his attorney. That got him a fine of $3,500.
Unbelievable.
Well, that's it. It is, and it's just Americans can hardly believe such a situation. One of the great shames of our media here is that it has not only barely even reports on these things.
They've been told what to do.
It does report on it, it reports on all of this as if this is perfectly fine, perfectly good. If it was any other country or any other situation,
right.
There would be outraged editorials appearing constantly in the New York Times and the Washington Post talking about the lack of free speech and the failure to live up to the democratic ideals that we expect when they're criticizing, I don't know, everything from China to Thailand. But when it comes to Germany or when it comes to Europe, when they're prosecuting thought criminals like Aaron Zundel, a very different standard is in effect.
I would suggest if this were to happen in the trial of Saddam Hussein, it would make far more news in this country than Ernst Zundel's case probably ever will.
Very true. Yes, that's right. Yes. I mean, thought crime when it comes to the Holocaust is the one thought crime that is endorsed by the establishment in this country. That's a really dangerous thing. It's the only chapter of history that to doubt publicly is a crime.
The only chapter in history. It's okay. Now, there are, well, never mind, I don't want to get into this whole thing, but you're right. You can question the existence of God, but there are certain things you cannot question or you go to prison for.
It's a secular form of blasphemy. It's a form of blasphemy, and it shows the extent to which the Holocaust story has a quasi religious status in our society.
Well, there have been some good books on this lately, and Norman Finkelstein's book and his new one, Beyond Chutzpah, extraordinary. So I think a lot of people are waking up finally. Back in a couple minutes with Mark Weber. Back with Mark Weber. I guess that the larger question here is, can Ernst Zundel be allowed to be found innocent?
Yes, that's right. It calls into question some very basic things about the whole power structure in Europe and in the United States these days. To find him innocent or to get rid of the law would be a tremendous setback for Jewish and Zionist interests, organized Jewry, in Europe and in the United States. I say that carefully because, but I say it because major Jewish organizations like the World Jewish Congress and the Anti-Defamation League have been working very hard, very eagerly during the last 10, 15 years to introduce precisely these laws in a whole in the Eastern European countries that have become part of the European Union in recent years.
As we have seen here, the so-called hate law, which, thank goodness, has been at least dispersed with for the time being now in the U.S. Congress, posed the gravest threat to freedom of speech in this country that has ever come down the pike. And these are the organizations behind this kind of legislation here and the organizations which have been behind, and successfully so, the same kind of laws in Europe. And look what we have.
That's right. The organizations which make a big show of support for free speech when it offends the sensibilities, the feelings of millions of people on religious grounds and so forth, these are the same organizations that are pushing to constantly expand what's considered proper speech in our society or permissible speech in our society, draw the line very much at speech that they consider harmful to their interests. And that's really what's at stake here. It's a question of power. It's a question of whose agenda is being furthered. And that's why the Zindel case is very important for that reason, because it's taking place in Europe at a time when there's a tremendous amount of reassessing, rethinking about the whole traditional power relationship that's existed for many years. What specifically I mean is Europeans are having increasing doubts about their relationship with the United States and also with Israel. One of the reasons for that is that America is no longer in Europe considered the model of how to deal with race relations. And we've seen this explode now in Europe in a way that we were assured would not happen because they were going along the right path.
Mm-hmm.
And America is less and less a model for not only Europe, but for the rest of the world as well. And that's making many Europeans reassess all of that kind of relationship over the years.
Oh, all right. So what is, for our listeners who don't know, what is Zindel being tried for? I mean, a lot of people listening, I don't mean to belabor the point, probably don't understand that there are these so-called thought crime laws in Europe. I mean, we still reflexively think, if somebody hates somebody, that's their right. It's not necessarily the case anymore that it's that simple, and at least in Europe it isn't. If somebody dislikes somebody, or if somebody has a different opinion, it doesn't matter. If you offend the law, you can be tried, fined, and imprisoned for a thought crime. And there are many different kinds of them, not just one or two. This is a very complicated issue. It's like a cancer, and once it becomes established in a nation's body politic or its code of ethics and laws, it's almost impossible to get it out there, because when you control someone's freedom of speech, you control their thoughts. And there we are in a gulag. It's that simple.
You know, Jeff, a lot of listeners may think, well, what's happening to this man in Europe doesn't really affect me very much.
All wrong.
There's a very definite reason why this is of great importance to Americans, and that's because what Zindel is on trial for are expressions of opinion here in the United States. That's really an extraordinarily important aspect of all of this. The very first count in the indictment brief against him is for what he has, what appears on the Zindel website, which is based here in the United States. That has a very ominous implication. If people can be put on trial in foreign countries for what is said here in this country, that's a very dangerous thing. Lots of countries have strange laws. Denouncing communism is a crime in certain countries, or saying certain, expressing certain views about different religions may be criminal in some countries. But in America, those kinds of views are protected under our Constitution. Zindel has been deported to Germany to stand trial, even though he was living here in the United States and is married, by the way, to an American citizen,
mm-hmm.
for expressions of views made on a website here. Now, he doesn't even run the website. It's not even, they don't even care if it's his views.
Mm-hmm.
The very first count is for expressions of views about the Holocaust, which are not even by Zundel, but they appear on the Zundel site, which is in fact maintained by his wife.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons why this particular trial has such important implications, not only for Germans or Europeans, but for the whole world, because it deals with the Internet. And it's the first trial I know of anywhere in which somebody is being threatened with imprisonment for expressions of views that are legal and proper and protected in the country in which they're being expressed.
The implications worldwide, at least in the Western world, that's for sure.
Well, it's one of the reasons why the defense in this case is really fighting this thing, because it does go to some very core questions about freedom of speech and freedom of expression.
Okay, so go ahead.
Well, I wanted to say something else. Another German national who's been living in the United States for a long time, Germar Rudolph, is scheduled to be deported very soon to Germany. And in fact, earlier I made a slight mistake. His attorney says, and the authorities are saying, that Germar Rudolph, who's lived in Chicago and was arrested several weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
is going to be deported as early as Monday, the 14th. And actually, the trial in Zundel's case has been postponed until Tuesday, the 15th. And I was getting the dates mixed up because it's as early as Monday, the 14th, that Germar Rudolph may be mm-hmm. Deported, and he faces years imprisonment for expressing criminal ideas, criminal thoughts about the Holocaust issue.
Okay. Is he also a German citizen still? He's here on a visa?
He's a German citizen, although he is married to an American citizen, and they have a infant daughter here in the United States.
Mm.
But in spite of that, he was arrested several weeks ago. He's been held...
On what grounds? Do we know?
The ground that were given was that he, and this is similar to the reason why Aaron Zundel was picked up, that he missed a hearing. It's a pretext, really. Foreign nationals, as everyone should know, have less rights in America than American citizens. American citizens still have some recourse that foreigners do not. And for that reason, this is the pretext anyway that's been given in the case of Germar Rudolph.
Okay, be right back in just a couple minutes with Mark Weber. Weber has laid out for us the implications of the Ernst Zundel trial in Germany and why it is important for all of us to pay attention to, whether we agree or disagree with what Mr. Zundel has said. There are issues of internet, of freedom of speech, of, extradition, and other things. What kind of witnesses do we expect to see the Zundel defense team, such as it may be, judge notwithstanding, present? Is he going to pull some names in?
Well, there's a lot of restrictions on what the defense can say in this case. That's a big impediment to the thing. The court has the right to refuse to hear witnesses.
The judge has a right.
The judge, yes. Yeah. I mean, the judge may refuse to even permit Zundel himself to testify.
Oh, really?
They can do all. They have much more latitude than they do in the United States, and that's a very dangerous thing. I don't really have a good sense right now about what the arguments will be presented in court. I do know that the defense team is arguing that the main provisions of the criminal code under which he's being prosecuted are unconstitutional and unfair on their face. The judge may just simply throw out those arguments. Again, the judge can also dismiss any arguments that try to show that the statements made by Aaron Zundel or that appear on the website or appear to anything else are accurate or have some validity. The judge can just say, well, that's irrelevant in this case. So there's some real severe restrictions on the kind of defense that the defense can defense attorneys can make in this case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to touch on something you said earlier, though, about Norman Finkelstein. The book, The Holocaust Industry, is, of course, really well worth reading. And in that book, Norman Finkelstein talks at great length about the way in which the Holocaust and the Holocaust remembrance and the Holocaust campaign has become a very important part of the international effort by Israel and by supporters of Israel to push their interests. And that was brought up just a few days ago, or the other week, when the United Nations General Assembly voted to designate January 27th as International Holocaust Remembrance Day. But Holocaust remembrance, of course, everyone feels it's right and proper, and it is, to remember all victims of war and genocide. But Holocaust remembrance is not, as its supporters claim, some noble effort motivated by a really sincere concern for humanity. It's a really one-sided campaign that was meant to further Zionist interests. And this is a point that Norman Finkelstein and quite a few other, even Jewish writers, have emphasized over the years. Once one understands what the agenda behind it is, then it's easier to understand why over the years the Holocaust has gotten more and more attention with the passage of time and not less, which is normally what happens when time goes by. We generally remember less, not more. About any
such as the Armenian genocide and so many others in history. What happened in Cambodia? Nobody remembers about those 3 million people.
Very, very true. We have no comparable monuments and memorials.
No, why wasn't this UN? And that was a UN resolution. Why That's wasn't right. the UN resolution a memorial to all victims of all Holocausts?
Well, there was an effort to do that, but I think that a lot of people who voted for it, a lot of the countries that voted for it, figured, well, it's largely symbolic, it really won't have any effect, and so forth over the
long
run.
Doesn't it disparage the memory of all the others, though?
Well, yes, implicitly it does. When memory is very selective, then it's a form of selective justice is really a form not of justice, but of injustice. And that's very true, especially in this case.
Hmm.
You know, there, as I mentioned, there are no really comparable museums or memorials to commemorate the vastly greater number of victims of Soviet and Chinese communism.
Look, the figures bandied about Uncle Joe, Stalin, our loyal ally in the war, and the number of people he liquidated run anywhere from 30 to 55 million people.
Yeah,
I mean, it's off the scale.
Right, it's off the scales. And historians generally acknowledge that... the number of Chinese who perished as victims of the regime of Mao Zedong range from 30 to more than 60 million.
Yeah, and we never hear a word about them.
We hear nothing about this in our schools and so forth, but politicians ritualistic. You know, it's no coincidence that the two largest Holocaust museums in the world, one is in Washington, D.C., and one is in Jerusalem. The one in America is funded and operated by a federal government agency, the United States Holocaust a memorial council. And this is an expression of power. This isn't some expression of altruistic and noble-minded concern for humanity.
It is an expression of power. It's saying, this is one big gorilla, and you better look out.
Well, it's so powerful that organizations behind it, as you know, Jeff, can use their clout to threaten those who speak out by threatening advertisers, by threatening suppliers, by going after people to destroy careers and to silence those who threaten their interests.
That's their MO, and they've been at it a long time, and you are woefully correct.
Well,
they do it all the time, and it's to the credit of all of you who have continued to contact your local stations and tell them you appreciate the diversity of views. You don't have to agree with me or my guests, and most of you don't in some cases. That's fine. But you're getting the broad picture here, and that's a picture that is in ever shorter supply these days, as you all know. So please don't hesitate. Call your stations. Call the sponsors. Let them know. Thank you very much for supporting this platform. Without you, We don't have much of a chance, and many of you have done wonderful things to support the program over the years, so don't stop. Just pick up the phone or send an email off to your station and say, hey, this program matters. Thank you. Believe me, program directors and general managers pay very close attention to that, and it's worth every moment of your time to do it. So, good point.
Well, every voice like this that is independent of the big establishment voices is very precious because there are so few of them. And you've been outstanding, really, Jeff, in speaking up for free speech for everyone, really, and particularly for a man like Aaron Sindel, who's actually being imprisoned and punished for his expressions of views.
And I don't necessarily agree with everything Mr. Sindel said, but we have to make a stand, folks. There either is freedom of speech or there isn't. It's like being partially pregnant. It doesn't happen. We either have it or we don't. And when it goes away in increments, it doesn't stop. It's like, again, a tumor that continues to grow with tendrils. It's spread all throughout society. Soon we'll be prisoners of our own homes, literally. And you've got to be aware of that, and I know most of you are. The work you do, Mark, has been over the years very courageous as well. And I don't know where we'd be without true honorable revisionists. And there have been people who have been nutcases on both sides of the ledger over the years, but we've got some honest efforts at bringing history into accord with reality, which is what true historians ought to be about, but in many cases they are not. So, okay, let's look ahead at this trial. It could last a week. It could last a month. We don't know.
Well, originally the prosecution had set aside 5 days for the trial. The thing may go on for a lot longer than that now. Indeed, one newspaper was speculating that a trial in Germany, a person has to be convicted or something has to happen to his case within 1 year or the person is released and the case is thrown out. Uh-huh. And there's one paper was speculating that so tenacious and so feisty have been the defense attorneys for Aaron Sindel that the case could drag on for quite a long time with appeals and so forth. The one of the importances of this case is this is the highest profile, the most arduously defended a Holocaust denial free speech case that's come to court in Germany ever. And that's really an important watershed. And it's coming at a time in which many, many Germans have growing doubts about the justice, even the sanity of throwing people in jail for just expressing unofficial views about something that happened 60 years ago.
The average German on the street probably paying very close attention to this. Any polls down there that have any credibility?
No. I would say the average person on the street is not really paying attention. That's why it's gratifying to see as much press coverage as there has been. There's a mixture of views in Germany. There are many people in Germany who do not like laws like this, but there are many others, perhaps even a majority, who regard such restrictions on free speech as a unpleasant but necessary price to be paid for living, as they think or say, in a democratic society.
So because exchanging, again, rights for their freedom.
Right.
Or at least protection and safety for their freedom.
Well, that's a legacy of the end of the war. It's a legacy of years in which West Germany was under the hegemony of the United States and now Germany itself. It's an attitude born out of that whole experience. And it's still very widespread. It's another way of saying that we Germans shouldn't and dare not even trust ourselves, that we can't handle an Aaron Sindel if he's allowed to say whatever he wants. That's really a kind of self-insulting view, actually. But there's a lot of Germans who accept it. Now, having said that, again, there's a shift of opinion. There's a whole kind of reevaluation going on in Europe right now, because of the events that are taking place, and because America's relationship with Europe has also changed since the end of the Cold War years.
Okay, in the UK, by the way, Tony Blair was dealt a major defeat today, and his version of the Patriot Act was defeated, which was kind of surprising to some people.
Yes, I've been listening to some of the commentary on that, and it seems that much of the opposition to Tony Blair's motion was really an expression of dissatisfaction with his policies on a whole range of issues, not least of which is the Iraq War.
Sort of a blanket rejection.
Right, right. It's a larger thing because the opposition Conservative Party in Britain has not been at all very gutsy in really standing up to Blair across the board or with regard to the Iraq issue. Indeed, no. It might even be more as much in favor as Blair himself for these restrictions that he was proposing.
Huh. Well, Mark, thanks for the update. We'll have you back as the trial progresses and get more if you've got the time. I'd appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. It's a
okay.
pleasure.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
Mark Weber and the latest on the Ernst Zundel trial. Lots of ramifications. We'll be back.